Good morning. John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week on the Ideas Network, and we'll start our Monday discussing a federal court ruling earlier this month that put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list, halting the state's new wolf hunt, and leaving other aspects of the DNR management plan in limbo. We'll talk about the impact of the ruling, what it might mean for efforts to conserve and manage the gray wolf population in Wisconsin. Of course, we'll take your calls and comments on this issue as well. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or leave your comment or question on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. My guest this hour is Pat Durkin, a Waupaca-based freelance outdoors columnist for Wisconsin newspapers and the president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Pat Durkin, well, good morning and welcome to the Joy Cardine program.
Good morning, John.
So this federal court ruling put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. What was this ruling based on?
Well, that's one of the kind of fun things about this ruling. You know, it puts the wolf back on the endangered species list, but doesn't really say they're endangered. It doesn't find that they're endangered. You know, we have good wolf populations, good strong populations across northeastern Minnesota, northern Wisconsin, and the UP of Michigan. But the court basically said that, well, the population we're talking about here covers, you know, nine states in total, you know, from Ohio across to Iowa and up to North Dakota. You know, so we have South Dakota, Illinois, Iowa all involved in this decision. And because there's no wolves, you know, established, you know, as a population in these other states, they basically said, well, they're not recovered, and therefore, you know, they should go back on the list. And so that was, you know, where that's curious, though, is that basically, you know, the biologists will say that, well, the wolves have basically recovered in the areas that can sustain them, you know, the areas with a good wolf habitat. So it's the chance of them ever going in these other states and establishing good populations. It's not very likely.
And so I think you had an editorial that just came out, and that's part of what this program was based on. And basically, this was a decision, in your view, not based on the science, but based on sort of a legal interpretation of the Endangered Species Act. Some are suggesting that this decision by federal court might end up resulting in congressional action, which might endanger the Endangered Species Act itself.
Yeah, that's one of the concerns that a lot of the scientists who are involved in the wolf research are, you know, that's one of their big concerns, that, you know, this is one of these rulings that, you know, might have unintended consequences that go beyond what people were originally concerned about. And, you know, and the one thing that where their fear is based is that, you know, 4 years ago, the Congress went in and basically said that the wolves are now off the endangered species list entirely for Idaho and Montana. And the thinking is that, well, if they went into that and made that decision, you know, for the western states, for those two western states, they could very likely go back in and say the same thing for the Great Lakes states, that, you know, by their reckoning, you know, they have this Endangered Species Act, you know, for the express purpose of recovering populations, and once they're recovered, they no longer need this federal help, federal protection, and the states are more than capable of maintaining these populations on their own. And when you have the courts getting involved and basically, you know, getting in there and disrupting what was the Congress's intention, the Congress could very likely come back and say, you're misinterpreting our intention here. Our intention was to get these things recovered and off the list, and now they're back on there, and creating this big, disruption of management for the states that involved in managing the wolves.
Well, essentially, the states have to kind of have a do-over of their management plans.
Yeah.
What's this going to mean in Wisconsin?
Well, in Wisconsin, you know, for right now, there's really nothing the state can do. If a rancher or a farmer is having a crop, but problems with the livestock, where wolves are, you know, killing the livestock, you know, until this ruling, you know, they could stop the wolf from the attack, you know, by shooting it, scaring it off, you know, killing it, basically. And now they can't do that. The state can't do that. The state has no control to go in there and no authority to go in remove problem wolves, lethally. So basically, it's the state's, really nothing they can do right now.
The judge who made the ruling used Minnesota's management plan as an example, saying it permitted the unlimited killing of wolves in certain areas. Some would see that as a problem.
Yeah, and that, it's one of those things you say, it's unlimited, killing, but chances are that, there'd be a random wolf going in here and a random wolf going in there, and the chances are if it got killed, as far as the population is concerned, it's not going to cause a real problem. I mean, it's not going to hurt the population. It's probably a random thing. And so I guess I always get back to, what really, how much protection do you have to give every single species that could wander off, from its area? We have moose sometimes go wandering off for thousands of miles and eventually get hit by a car. Wolves eventually get hit by cars. And that's usually, we had a case of the cougar, a few years ago where it left South Dakota and went all the way across the Great Lakes states, through Wisconsin, across the UP, across southern, Canada, all the way to Connecticut eventually. It gets killed by a car out there. So, you can't guarantee their safety once they get outside their area anyway. So I'm not sure really how much more safety you can actually put into our systems to help these individuals that go wandering off the reservation, so to speak.
Jonathan Lovorn, who is the chief counsel for the Humane Society of the United States, which filed the original lawsuit, one of the things that he said, and now here we go, too many pieces of paper in front of me. I just wanted to make sure I got this quote direct here.
Yeah.
He said, these are his words, they drew arbitrary political circles around areas that had wolves and tried to delist them in those areas regardless of their historic range. And the court said you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to get your reaction to that.
Yeah, well, that is a good legal argument, but I think these, when they say political boundaries, I don't know if that's a political boundary as much as a social boundary, where you look at where a wolf can actually, where a wolf population can actually reproduce and be living in there without causing lots of real problems as far as preying on people's pets, preying on local farmer stuff. So I don't think it's all that arbitrary. I think these are probably pretty well thought out boundaries based on human expectations of where the wolves can live.
Mm-hmm. There was also some speculation in a Minneapolis Star Tribune article that this ruling would lead to more illegal wolf killings by farmers and hunters. Do you think that's likely?
Well, I think that's, historically, that's what happens is when people start getting frustrated by, when you go back and forth to these court decisions now, this is the fourth time we've had it happen in Wisconsin where we've, removed the wolf from the list and then the courts put it back on. And, every case you look at, historically in the last 30 years, we start getting this interference where they start viewing the wolf not so much as a species of wildlife, but as something that's, they start looking at as government overreach or, the government's, going into their lives, dictating, what's good for them. They start looking at it as the outsiders coming into their turf and messing things up and, taking away their controls. And it's, one of those processes that, I think there's a good argument to be made that, I would be among the first to say that Wisconsin legislature acted way too fast in bringing this wolf hunt back to us, bringing it back and in instituting it. But then once they did, they didn't really give the kind of controls for the Department of Natural Resources that to quietly bring this thing back in, to have lots of public hearings, figure out where we can have the hunt, and do it in a real methodical process where people are involved in the process. They're listening to all sides. All sides won't be happy ultimately, but at least we'll have a good discussion before we implement the thing. Well, we pushed it through, and we've been real. I think the DNR, they don't let the wolf advocates on these committees to talk about it. They basically say, well, you're against all wolf harvest, all wolf killing. So what can you contribute to this discussion? Well, then I think, that they still have an opinion that's worth hearing, even if you don't agree with it. And this is our, this is democracy. We do manage our wildlife based on the public good, and they're part of the public, whether you like their opinion or not. So we're kind of, I think we should be listening to them, even if we don't always agree with them.
Well, one of the things I want to get to, and we're getting close to a break here, so I don't really want to launch into this now, but there was a survey done, a public opinion
right.
survey done, and it seemed to indicate that we're pretty happy with the numbers of wolves that we have now, and we don't really want to see, although they didn't mention a specific number, there was some issue about where what the good number is.
Right.
But I want to get into research in a little while. We're going to take a break and catch up with some news on Wisconsin Public Radio, talking with Pat Durkin today about the recent federal court ruling that put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. Do you agree that the gray wolf should be back on the list? Why or why not? Did you participate in the state wolf hunt? How do you think this is going to impact the state's efforts to conserve and manage the gray wolf population? We'll take your calls and questions as we move along through the hour here on Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org is the email address, and you can also leave a comment on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. John Munson in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Joy Cardine today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the aftermath of a federal court ruling which put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. My guest is Pat Durkin, a Waupaca-based freelance outdoors columnist for Wisconsin newspapers. He's also the president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. And Pat, just before the the news, I brought up the survey that the DNR created and administered, caused to be done about what we think about the wolf population in the state of Wisconsin, and some pretty interesting results. Why don't you kind of summarize that for us and put use that to maybe place how we think about the wolf in perspective with this court ruling?
Yeah, it's probably one of the most comprehensive surveys you'll ever see of a population like Wisconsin's. It was, they really made an effort. I think it was like almost 80% of the people they surveyed were from wolf country in Wisconsin, people that, live among the wolves or live at least in an area where wolves are there, year-round. And so people couldn't say that later that, you surveyed Wisconsinites, but not, not enough from that part of the state. So they did a really good job of making sure they got everyone's opinion, heard, as can best be represented by, 8,000 people, whatever their final number was. And what was interesting to me was that, for the most part, people were very content with the numbers of wolves as we now have them, which at the time was maybe somewhere around 650 to, 675 wolves in that region, based on DNR surveys. But also what's interesting is that they also favored, wolf hunting, that, if the population can sustain it, and in some cases, the wolves cause problems, they understand that. And, really, I think overall, you look at the survey, and it kind of said to me that, they might not, not every Wisconsinite might be tuned into wolves quite the way some folks are, but overall, they have a decent feel for the subject, and they have a decent feel for the wolf itself and, what it can do and what it can't do. And they basically support, where we're at right now. And I think some people were really thinking that when they got that much of a survey across northern Wisconsin that you see a lot more antagonistic views toward the wolves being the dominant theme. But that wasn't there at all. There's always people who don't like wolves, and there's also people who worship the wolf. But I think most people, as we have the case in most things in politics and society, most people are somewhere in the middle. They don't have the extreme views, either way on wolves. And I thought it was pretty telling piece of research.
I'm going to bring in Adrian Weideman, who is a certified wildlife biologist with the Wildlife Society and a retired wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And Adrian Weideman, welcome to the Joy Cardine program. Welcome back, I should say. I know I've chatted with you on more than one occasion on wildlife issues, including wolves. Good morning. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, John. Good morning, Pat.
So I just want to get your take. We're talking about this judge's decision to put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. I'd like to get your take on that kind of as an overview, and then maybe talk about how Wisconsin has managed its wolf population and get your views on that as well.
Sure. Yeah, this was really unfortunate. I think Wisconsin has done a good job, and the Great Lakes region has done a good job recovering wolf populations. And I think we've always felt that there needed to be a mechanism in place where once populations recover, we need to be able to delist them and get the management back to the states. And the lawsuit on this was based a lot on the concept of the distinct population segment, which is a portion of the Endangered Species Act that says that there's three different categories under which a species can be listed or delisted. One is as a species, the second is as a subspecies, and the third is under it as a distinct population segment. And what people tried to argue was that, well, the wolves in our region were listed by species, and as they recovered, the Fish and Wildlife Service decided to delist them by distinct population segments. And the arguments were being made that unless they were originally listed as a distinct population segment, they shouldn't be delisted as a distinct population segment. That the concept of this distinct population segment was intended to give greater levels of protection, not as a way for removing endangered species protection. And I think most of us have argued is that, well, once a population recovered and you can define a distinct portion of that population that's separate from other parts of the population, it should be go back to state management. So that's kind of the biggest argument I think being made right now, and it's just I guess kind of the intricacies of the Endangered Species Act, that it's a complex act as far as how a species gets listed and delisted.
The state's wolf population in Wisconsin, and obviously the wildlife doesn't pay any attention to political boundaries, but looking at Wisconsin, the state's wolf population topped out at somewhere between what, 800 and 900 individuals in Wisconsin. I would imagine mostly concentrated in the northern third of the state just because of habitat. And whereabouts is that population now? And what's the number? Is there some magic number that says this is the right number?
That's correct. The population peaked at about 850. And we have to remember, too, that when we talk about the population, we're talking about the number of animals the DNR is able to count in middle or late part of winter. So this is much less than what's going to be on the landscape much of the year, that population probably doubles in the springtime. And you're correct, too, that population doesn't follow political boundaries. There's about 600-some in the UP of Michigan, which are really basically the same population as Wisconsin. And then there's another 2,400 in Minnesota. So they're all a large interacting population of over 3,500 animals. What is the correct population is hard to say. And in our 99 plan, we set a goal of 350 wolves for Wisconsin. And at the time, we had less than 200 in Wisconsin, and we've gone quite a bit past that. Now, there are people who are arguing we should push back down to 350 since that was a goal for what's now a 16-year-old plan. But many of us are saying, well, that's no longer feasible. The population's well above that, and it's obvious the carrying capacity is much above that we should manage somewhere at a higher level. I don't know at this point there's a correct number. I think 350 seemed like a reasonable kind of a threshold level at which you can allow things like public harvest to occur. But at this point, I think it's a matter of just managing the conflicts, trying to maintain to stabilize the population in the areas where there's suitable habitat, and keep numbers low in areas where there's marginal habitat and where there's high levels of conflict.
Minnesota's minimum in for their wolf management program is 1,600. And as you point out, the original plan was 350, but that's when we had quite a few less animals than that in the state. But Minnesota set it at 1,600. That's quite a bit larger than what we've been talking about in Wisconsin. What would account for such a large disparity?
Well, Minnesota is the last place where wolves persisted in the lower 48 states. And when the wolves were listed as an endangered species in 1978, the one exception that was made at the time was Minnesota. They were listed as a threatened population in 1978 because their population already was at, I think, close to 1,000 animals at the time. So they've never been as highly endangered as they were in the rest of the United States. And what the Fish and Wildlife Service tried to argue in their 2012 rule was that Minnesota population basically has spread out and occupied the landscapes in Wisconsin, Michigan, and that this Western Great Lakes population that was delisted basically is an expansion of that Minnesota population. But they're now pretty much at the limits of where there's suitable habitat. They're starting to spread out into more marginal areas. And this is probably about as much of a population as this area can have. And it's a recovered, healthy population at this point.
I want to take a call, and Adrian, I want you to respond to this. Ron joins us from northern Wisconsin this morning. Let's see, good morning.
Yeah, and good morning, John. I live up here in northern Wisconsin. I work outdoors in northern Wisconsin, and I mean, there's just this perception that it's often put out there by a lot of folks that, you know, up here we live in these terrible oppressed situations where we live in this fear of wolves roaming around our houses, and we can hardly go to the mailbox safely. And you know, the reality is most people up here have no interactions with wolves. Many of them, to most, have never even seen one, or if they have, it's something they run across the road in the middle of the night. It's not like this pervasive fear that is often sold, that we live under these terribly oppressive conditions. And I think Pat really brought up a good point when we got the season, the way it was pushed through, instead of wading into the pool slowly, putting a toe in, we just dove in. And the dog thing was a problem, because I don't know how you could not see that coming is going to cause a firestorm of emotion. And to push that through, to make so many people mad, to what? How many did we harvest this year by the use of dogs? 4? Last year, I think it was 30. To have that much negative publicity, early in the wolf hunt season, wolf hunt history, was unnecessary. And it was done to placate one specific group in this state, and that was unfortunate, because it caused, it helped cause what we got now. We need the wolf off the list because we need to be able to manage him. I agree 100% with Pat, and it needs to be done responsibly and with the best science available.
Okay, Ron, thanks for that. I want to get Adrian's response, and then we'll go back to Pat Durkin. Adrian, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree that the legislature was overly prescriptive in how it designated this wolf harvest. There was not a need to include how wolves needed to be harvested, the length of the season. Those are the kind of things that traditionally the legislature has left for the DNR to decide. And in the case of the wolf harvest, the legislature decided when they could be harvested, how they would be harvested, where they would be harvested, and included ruling that wolves had to be hunted species if they were neither on the federal or state, neither the state or the federal endangered species or threat species list. And so it almost forces the hands of those people who don't support the wolf harvest, that the only way they can stop the wolf harvest by putting them back on the endangered species list. So it's unfortunate, because I think we need to keep delisting and public harvest as two separate issues, that because they're a delisted species, that doesn't mean they have to be harvested. And if there's a harvest to be done, that has to be a whole different process than just getting them delisted.
And one last question for you, Adrian. What do you think is going to happen now because of this ruling?
Well, I suspect that congressional action is a likely scenario. That's what happened out west, as Pat had indicated, that local legislators get so frustrated, as we're hearing already, that what they think is a normal process for the Endangered Species Act for getting animals delisted is not working. And so often you read these documents, the thing that comes out often is the intent of Congress. And if you're constantly frustrating the efforts of getting an animal delisted, and Congress will maybe reestablish what its intent will be. And so that's the unfortunate thing about this. It actually ends up probably weakening the Endangered Species Act.
Adrian Weideman, thanks for joining us this morning. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me. Bye, Pat.
Adrian Weideman, a certified wildlife biologist with the Wildlife Society, retired wildlife biologist with the Wisconsin DNR. Patrick Durkin, still with us. We're talking about the aftermath of the recent federal court decision putting the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. Patrick, anything you want to follow up on that Adrian brought up?
No, I thought Adrian did a very good job of explaining some of the details of this ruling.
Okay. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. This morning, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. And you can also leave your comment or question on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. One of the things that our caller brought up, and Adrian didn't address that specifically, but it certainly has been a sore point for a lot of people that the legislature decided that it was okay to hunt wolves with dogs. And I'd like to get your take on that, because that's been a kind of a real flashpoint.
Yeah, you know, Adrian and I kind of disagree on the use of hounds. I think it's something that, you know, talking to the guys who run dogs and run hounds, they know that that time of year, if they put a number of hounds on a wolf, and yeah, there'll be a problem. But you know, if you pursue them, like one hound out there chasing a wolf, eventually, you know, if it catches up, it won't get in there close enough to get eaten or killed, or it won't be a big fight, because the wolf's gonna win any kind of one-on-one battle. And so to me, it's something that, you know, we can't, there's some practices of hunting that some people won't like, and the whole idea of hounds on wolves is one of them, that people just, whether they talk to hound hunters or not, they have this idea of what's going to happen. It might not be based on reality. It might not be based on something of the actualities of the tactic involved, but that it's just something emotional that people just really rebel at. And so to me, though, I think it's something that we should, before we really, you know, rule it out as a possibility, that's one of those things I think we should have really discussed thoroughly and looked at it, you know, from as objectively as possible, and let this thing play out in the public forums.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been my biggest problem with the whole way we handled this, was we basically, the legislature came in, basically set the rules, and then, you know, said, if you don't agree, you know, too bad. And I just think that's an arrogant way to go about setting policy on something that it's so emotional. It's something that people really wanted to have their say on, and we basically didn't make that possible. So therefore, I think, well, we'll probably be fighting about this a long time, because going into it initially, we didn't follow our own sense of, I think, you know, civility on this. You know, we really have a good democratic process involved.
Let's try and take a quick call before we have to break for news. And, Patrick, we may have to have you respond to this caller after the news. We'll go to Matt in Ellsworth. Matt, good morning.
Hey, guys. Hey, Pat, I lived in Alpaca for 2 years, so I know exactly where you're coming from. I actually grew up in Danbury, Wisconsin, up in northern Wisconsin, and my uncle's a beef farmer, and so are several of my neighbors, so I can relate to it personally. We've lost a lot of livestock over the last couple of years due to wolves. What I think, but what gets me is the fact that an activist, a federal judge that has no connections to northern Wisconsin at whatsoever, is be able to make a ruling, and that just drives me nuts. It's a federal overreach. I believe it's a state's issue. The state should be controlling whether, you know, like you mentioned earlier in the early part of the hour, about the fact that in Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, the populations are fine. These other states that are just falling behind. So it's just one size fits all. And I just think that's a terrible way to govern. But yeah, that's my remark. And thank you for taking my call.
Matt, thanks so much for the call. If you can give me about 30 seconds or so, Patrick, on what our caller had to say about federal overreach.
Yeah, well, I think it's always one of those situations when we have a judge out in Washington, D.C., making a ruling, you know, for people, you know, 1,000 miles away, there's always resentment. And I guess the only thing you can say in those kind of situations is, well, you know, it's our system of government. It's not perfect, you know, and we'll always have these kind of disappointments and irritations and frustrations, and all you can do is basically, you know, keep making your phone calls, keep calling your congressman, and stay involved in the democratic process and try to do something about it. But, you know, I hate to see people, though, there's some people who take these situations and do something illegal, like killing a wolf out of frustration. That's not going to solve the problem.
All right, we're going to go to the newsroom in just a moment. Then we'll come back and have more of our discussion with Patrick Durkin and you about the wolf in Wisconsin. 800-642-1234, talk@WPR.org, or the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, all great ways to get in touch. The news is next from NPR. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A federal court ruling earlier this month has put the gray wolf back on the endangered species list. We're talking with Pat Durkin about that. Pat is a Waupaca-based freelance outdoors columnist for Wisconsin newspapers and president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Let's take a call here before we go back to you, Pat. And Melanie in Wolf Range is with us. Melanie, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I live in Polk County in Wolf Range, and I just had a couple statements. At the IW International Wolf Center on December 22nd, there were four experts there, and they were one of the questions they were asked, and Richard Teal was one of them, our Wisconsin recovery biologist in the 70s and 80s, and one of the questions they were asked is, was state management in the Great Lakes endanger wolves? And Richard Teal did say flatly that the jury is still out on that. And secondly, I just want to say that the ESA ruling has been said to me, you know, would it will increase poaching in Wisconsin. And I think historically you could talk with anyone about this, biologist in Wisconsin, that poaching is very high in Wisconsin. It has a history that goes way back. And that I would argue that this ESA rule is going to increase that. It almost seems as if it's an excuse to poach. Wolves were extirpated by 1955 in Wisconsin, and Alton Leopold had arguments, was constantly defending the wolf back in the 40s, as deer hunters wanted to extirpate them, and they did. And so I think ESA is just an excuse. This has been going on for a decade, an excuse to protect the, you know, the coveted deer population in the state. So that's all I wanted to say.
Melanie, thanks for the call. Patrick Durkin?
Yeah, you know, there's some belief that right now in the last, you know, 10, 11 years, there's some evidence that the number of poaching cases has increased, but it's still not really something that's very easy to document. I mean, that's always the problem with something that's illegal. That's often easily hidden, but, you know, as far as, you know, using this as an excuse, I think I'm not sure it's really an excuse. I think it's just kind of the reality. When people start thinking they got to take the law into their own hands, you know, I think it's just more likely. And when you have a legal season that's well regulated, and people, you know, endorse a well regulated season, you know, then people don't feel so frustrated by it when they are, you know, being told that you're not responsible enough to manage your own wolf population. Well, then you get some people out in the fringe who start thinking it's you know, that they can now do this kind of thing, you know, because, you know, someone irritated them, someone stepped on their turf, and they jump back, you know, they fight back that way. And but as far as you know, the extirpation comment, you know, I don't think that was a case of poaching that drove those wolves off, you know, down into the, you know, where we basically, you know, drove them right out of the state. That was pretty much a managed effort by states to get rid of wolves.
Well, there was a bounty on wolves.
Right, right. I mean, we had bounties on. This was a state, basically state mandate. So, I mean, to blame that on poaching, I think, well, I don't endorse poaching, but I think, no, you know, poaching is a problem. Poaching will always be a problem to some extent, but there's really not that much evidence saying it's gotten really bad lately. There's nothing out there that supports that.
Mm-hmm. We have a comment from William on Facebook who writes, I think there should be some stipulations set in place for people unaffected by the wolf population. This is a fantastic thing, but the few people out there losing animals to wolves, they should be able to do something to put an end to it. I know population control isn't a perfect science, but I don't think we should be putting such black and white regulations on something that is itself very gray.
Well, I agree. I think that's, you know, part of the problem. You know, when you get in a case of trying to manage any species of wildlife, it's not easy. I mean, we don't have that great of tools. And then one thing I always point out when people want to argue about population numbers, whether it's deer population numbers or wolf population numbers, you know, we can't even agree on how many people we have. I mean, we argue that the people who do demography studies, they're always arguing among themselves about the best way to count people. So why in the world, then, do we think we can actually get perfect estimates on deer and perfect estimates on wolves? I think, come on, you know, we'll never know for certain, but, you know, we do have enough science, and all we can do is base our decisions based on what we do know, but nothing's for certain. But, you know, because science is never stopping. It's always evolving. Our understanding will always keep increasing, you hope. And I just don't see where we have to be so dogmatic all the time on these numbers and insisting we know which number is the right one, because we don't.
Mm-hmm. Steve in Rice Lake, you'll be next on the program. Steve, good morning. Thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. Hey, I tuned in late, but I'm just wondering, I keep hearing about this judge's ruling with the historical range of the wolf, and Iowa and Illinois are included. I don't hear anybody saying anything about the fact that the habitat is gone. I mean, you know, okay, you're commenting on a historical range, and we don't have the wolves in Iowa and Illinois, but we also, when we had the historical range, we didn't have suburban sprawl and crawl and these huge communities popping up and the habitat being chewed away on. So I find it interesting that they can make a ruling on a historical range, but they failed to mention the habitat side. I don't know, maybe they did in their 110-page report, but it seems to be getting lost in the discussion. I was wondering if I could get a comment on that, and I'll take it off the air. Thank you.
Steve, thanks so much for your call this morning. Pat, you addressed this in your opinion piece, too, so why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
Yeah, the habitat was discussed, but I guess that's one of the things that was interesting in this ruling was that, you know, yeah, you can call into question a lot of the things that they brought up, but, you know, where is the evidence that there is habitat out there that could sustain a population of wolves? And like I said earlier, you know, we're not talking here about a random wolf walking through a guy's woodlot in southwestern Wisconsin or over in northeastern Iowa, where it might be. You know, you're talking about actually sustaining a population in the shadow of, you know, large urban areas, in the shadow of large agricultural areas, that the habitat comes and goes a lot of times for other wildlife, because, you know, we harvest, you know, a good portion of deer habitat every year, every time we cut the corn fields. And so you have all these things that have changed dramatically. And the other point I made in my column is that, well, if you want to get down to restoring historical ranges, well, why stop with the wolf? You know, why don't we talk about bringing the bison back across, you know, all across North America? It's a historical range. Or the woodland caribou, the moose. There's lots of animals. The elk, you know, right now we bring them back into some areas. And before long, you know, elk actually do pretty well in our shadows, but they cause problems too. But other animals like cougars and wolves and bison, they don't seem to do so well. And moose too, and it can only go so far south with their needs. If they can't live where they don't have a home that can support them. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with the wolves. You know, wolves, you know, from what we are seeing, they have done better than what we expected in northern Wisconsin and in the UP. But the thing I point out to people who always want to cling to this 350 population goal of wolves, well, you know, when we got down to, you know, restocking wild turkeys, we never thought wild turkeys would do well across, you know, north of Highway 10. And the fact that they are, you know, surpassing our expectations there, no one's saying, well, we should have, you know, stopped at Highway 10 or Highway 29 with turkeys. No, we're benefiting from the fact that they are more adaptable than we realized. And wolves are more adaptable than we realize, but I think we're seeing the extent of the wolf and what it's comfortable with, you know, based on what we're seeing here in Wisconsin. They aren't doing that well, you know, outside the north woods, because it just isn't the habitat to support them.
After the ruling, State Senator Tom Tiffany called for Wisconsin to completely defund the state's wolf management program. What's your reaction to Senator Tiffany?
Well, Senator Tiffany has a history of, I think, always overreacting instead of letting things play out in a systematic process. And he's the same kind of guy that, you know, wanted to disband the DNR's deer program, you know. And so, it plays well probably with a certain constituency out there that he, you know, caters to. And I guess, you know, we kind of come to expect that from Senator Tiffany, who I do get a kick out of the guy, but I just think that's not how we should do things. Every time we're mad, we talk about defunding. Let's work this through the process and get. I think you ultimately, you know, we'll go back and Congress probably will get involved in here at some point. And I think this is one of these cases where if the judge had simply said, "Hey, there's some things here you guys need to straighten out. But there's nothing here that says the wolf's endangered by the current management program." So, you know, put something on hold. I'm sure there's other things she could have done to get people's attention and clean up some parts of the Endangered Species Act and the Endangered Species List and these different rulings, and have some, I think, reasonable middle ground. But by basically putting this thing back on the Endangered Species List when they're not endangered, Well, I think in her way, she threw another flame on the fire, and then put more fuel in the fire. And that's when you draw the Senator Tiffany responses, and you have what's always sad in these situations. You have the people on the two extremes fighting about things that most people in the middle just don't want to fight about. They realize there's better ways to deal with these things.
Do you think this decision by this federal judge is going to be appealed?
That's what would be interesting to see I would hope it would be appealed, but then again, if Congress comes in and basically says no, this is what we're going to do, it's going to end the need for an appeal. So I guess I don't really know. I can't. Boy, to try to predict stuff on the wolf, it's always going to keep you guessing. Wolves are just one animal that really inspires the most irrational responses in people you'll ever see.
Mm-hmm. Do you have concerns about the health of the gray wolf population in the long run, or do you think overall we're doing a pretty good job managing it?
I think the timber wolf is here to stay. The gray wolf's here to stay. It's not going to be we're not going to ever drive it to the point of extinction again. I think we've learned our lesson there. That just isn't a good way to proceed. So I'm really optimistic about the long-term health of the gray wolf.
Okay.
And I still think it's a cool animal to have around.
Well, we'll leave that on a positive note then. Patrick Durkin, thanks so much for joining me this morning. Appreciate your time.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Pat Durkin is a Waupaca-based freelance outdoors columnist for Wisconsin newspapers, president of the Wisconsin Outdoor Communicators Association. Bill Martin's produced this hour programming along with Christy Taylor, and Brianne Chasseau is our on-air producer for this morning. More to come on the Joy Cardine program after 7 o'clock. And so stick around for that. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.